Thanks, Jess, for a great show. You are listening to KBUT Community Radio, 90.3 in Crested Butte, 88.9 in Gunnison, and worldwide at KBUT.org. This is Community Matters, KBUT's public affairs program airing every other Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. I'm your host, Kate Knapp, and on today's episode, we'll get the latest from High Country Conservation Advocate's recent hire and learn what's next for Mount Emmons. We'll also learn more about some of the new mental health programs for employees coming to the Gunnison Valley. I'm joined now by High Country Conservation Advocate's newest hire, Jonathan Hare. Jonathan was hired earlier this year as the organization's advocacy director. He's now at the helm for a historic moment for the organization, the Gunnison Valley, and the state. Just last week, the Biden administration announced protections for the Thompson Divide area. This means there's now a 20-year safeguard from new oil and gas leasing and new mining for more than 200,000 acres across the western slope, including Mount Emmons, locally known as Red Lady, just west of Crested Butte. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with your new role as the advocacy director. Can you tell folks what you do?
Well, thanks for the question. Advocacy director for the High Country Conservation Advocates is a really interesting position in this community where I get to focus on the public lands that are located here in Gunnison County. There's about 2 million acres of public lands, which represents about 80% of the land base here in Gunnison County. And those lands are managed by both the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service, as well as the National Park Service there at Kerr County. My job as advocacy director is to keep an eye on these places, to look at projects that are proposed for them, to look at trends and new uses that are developing, look at the impacts that are happening from the current uses of those lands, and to advocate for the conservation of them, which, you know, really represents the ultimate, you know, protecting and preserving them and trying to hold that resource for as long as we can to impact the largest amount of people that we can over generations of time.
Yeah. And so, you know, like I mentioned, you came to HICA at a pretty historic time. Just like last week, we learned of the news that the feds are protecting the Thompson Divide. And like we mentioned, this is more than 200,000 acres. What does this mean specifically for the Gunnison Valley?
So last week's Thompson Divide mineral withdrawal was indeed a historic moment for public lands in Gunnison County. The Thompson Divide withdrawal area extends north almost clear to Glenwood Springs. It comes into Gunnison County up near Paonia and extends down here to Crested Butte and all the way south to the Ohio Creek Valley. What the mineral withdrawal represents is the first 20 years. It's our first layer of protection for that stringer of 221,000 acres. This morning I did a little research and looked at the maps, and about 100,000 of those acres are specifically in Gunnison County that are protected. We hope that, you know, these protections will keep things the way they are. We will not see any new mining or oil and gas extraction in those 100,000 acres of Gunnison County in the next 20 years. I think what's really important for people to note is that the Colorado Outdoor Recreation and Economy Act, also known as the CORE Act, will be the next opportunity. And if Congress were to pass that legislation known as the CORE Act, that would be a forever withdrawal of the Thompson Divide area from mineral extraction. And that's our ultimate goal, is to provide forever protection on these lands. So what we saw last week was a big protection for Red Lady, extending to the west over to Irwin, up into Paonia, Aspen. That's a big piece of habitat to be connected with Aspen, Paonia, Crested Butte for wildlife, also for recreation. once again, protecting vast acreages of land. Most of the things I like to do out on public lands takes a lot of land, takes a lot of acres to go ride mountain bikes, go hunting, to go out and explore and hike and see all these beautiful vistas. So we're looking for big picture protections here. And the Thompson to Divide mineral withdrawal was the first big one.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too. I know you're a new hire, but even thinking about HICA's history here in the Gunnison Valley and its main mission to protect Mount Emmons and Red Lady, you know, thinking about that, what does this moment mean for you and the organization?
Well, for me personally, I've been working on this topic for 5 years. In my previous role with the United States Forest Service, I also did quite a few days and long hours of work to bring the Thompson Divide mineral withdrawal to fruition. So personally, I'm happy because it's something that I've also contributed to in my past work. For High Country Conservation Advocates, it's the first big piece in almost a 50-year legacy of this work of being focused on Mount Emmons, Red Lady, Crested Butte, Coal Creek Watershed, the East River, Gunnison County, and the state of Colorado. I mean, for an environmental organization to work for 40 years on a specific cause and to begin to find some traction and to start to see a layer of protection on those lands, it's just a historic occasion for not only HICA, but also for this community.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a long time coming. Like you said, more than 5 decades to get here. So now that we have these protections, what is in store for HICA?
Well, you know, our work on Mount Emmons, i.e. Red Lady, I don't think will ever end. There is historic mining impacts that are present there on the face of Mount Emmons that require a water treatment plant to clean up the pollution before it comes back into our water source. Somebody has to own that. Somebody has to manage that, and that costs money. So I believe as an organization, you know, HICA will always have our eyes on Red Lady. Furthermore, you know, the withdrawal doesn't completely take the whole mountain off of the market, so to speak. The next piece is a land exchange that has been worked on for about 3.5 years now between the United States Forest Service and the Mount Emmons Mining Company. And in that land exchange, some of the federal land on Mount Emmons will become private property owned by the mine. In exchange, the U.S. Forest Service is going to get 3 private properties that are ranch properties, vast acreages of wetlands with diverse ecological resources. So from my perspective, it's a pretty good trade. The impacted mine lands on Mount Emmons for these beautiful ranches. But once that land exchange is done, there's conservation easements that will be put in place through Crested Butte Land Exchange or Crested Butte Land Trust. And those conservation easements are going to be to sanitize the molybdenum ore body. So hopefully preventing another mining company from ever legally being able to get through those sort of firewalls, conservation easements. And additionally, there'll be conservation easements for public recreational access across that private land. So, you know, the skiing and the hiking and the future recreational opportunities on this mountain that's just 3 miles west of our community here will be legal, and folks will be able to go enjoy those opportunities. So, you know, we want to make sure that happens. We want to keep supporting the reclamation of the mine up there and the operation of the water treatment plant. We want to get the land exchange done and get those conservation easements in place, because that's a big piece forever. Once we have the land exchange done, then it's back to the Corps Act, which would make the withdrawal forever. And then we can all really breathe a sigh of relief. So from my perspective, hopefully we have our first layer. There's a few big more dominoes that are going to fall, and Red Lady will be ours, mine free forever.
Wow. And so you mentioned, too, you know, some new kind of issues on the horizon. As, you know, even when we get good news like this, there's other things that we need to think about, including drought, the different expectations that users have on public lands, and challenges that other organizations face to preserve public lands. How can HICA and other groups prepare for this problem?
Well, these are our public lands in this community. And though they're under federal ownership and managed by federal agencies, they really are specifically important to our community. I think there's a lot of things changing right now in the state of Colorado at a bigger, higher level, where we're starting to see that recreation, wildlife, scenic, and open space type ideals on our public lands are actually way more profitable and sustainable than resource extraction and ground disturbing activities. So hopefully we're at the beginning of what's a paradigm change in public lands in Western Colorado, where we really value the economics that happen with, you know, outfitter guide companies, recreation, and we find a balance to the tourists who are coming here and the new residents, the new visitors. As we move forward into, you know, how will HICA conserve and advocate for public lands around here? Well, the Thompson Divide mineral withdraws about 100,000 acres of what looks like almost 2 million acres of public land. So there's vast, vast acres out there that are at risk for speculation from oil and gas or mining. So we have these impacts to our watersheds. There's the pressure that could come from industrial type industries, but we also have things like diseases and bugs that have killed entire stands of trees. We also have road and trail systems that are not efficiently built and not sustainably built. They're putting erosion and causing downstream turbidity in our rivers. So we need to do a lot of cleanup. Watersheds need some work. We need to do that in a very thoughtful way that involves conservation and really highlighting what we need to, where we need to work and where we need to leave be. Furthermore, people have a lot of expectations for our public lands. Whether you are here to recreate, whether you have a permit, maybe to graze cattle. There are a lot of rights and a lot of expectations and a lot of things that people want to do on our public lands. And so, you know, I really feel that it's important for us as a community to come together as stakeholders, identify what's happening out there, look to the future and understand what could happen, and really try and protect and preserve what we have and not let it change faster than we'd like it to or where we don't want it to. Manage for unintended consequences. We don't want things to happen out there that we never even saw coming. And, you know, really think towards the future and what is the best value for each acre of public land that we're so lucky to have. It's the reason that I moved here. It's the reason why I plan to stay here. I know most of the folks around, they come here for either to live here, to visit here, but we often come here for these public lands. And I really think it's important that we try and keep what we have the way it is. You did ask about organizations, and I do want to throw in, you know, I think in the future, HICA has a great opportunity to help out with organizations. Both the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management are funded by the federal budget. And, you know, I'm not even sure if Congress got it together and passed that this year yet completely. It keeps coming up, right? And it'll come up again in September, I'm sure. So we need to support these organizations, the Gunnison Ranger District, the Gunnison Field Office of the BLM. They're really fighting the battle on the ground for us, and they have a lot of pressure coming from a lot of different directions. Oftentimes, they don't have places for their employees to live. They have a hard time recruiting new staff because of the cost of living in our community and some of our affordable housing or lack thereof. So I think, you know, once again, as a community, we all really need to come together as stakeholders and think about how we support these organizations, how we build them up and, you know, give them the best resources they can to take care of, you know, what is a very important factor for all of us that have moved here, lived here, come here on vacation.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. The power of partnerships. What are some other takeaways for you looking back on HICA and this moment that we're here, you know, that we're at now?
Well, you know, it's just a powerful legacy that High Country Conservation Advocates has put together. To be here in 1977 when this mine, when the mine showed up and told everybody that this was going to happen, to have that foresight and to have that passion for your local community and to fight back and say, you know, we like the way it is here. I think one of the things that's lost is we all think about this mine on Mount Emmons, but there was a vast system of power lines and roads and trains that were going to ship tailings all the way south, almost to W Mountain and Gunnison. So it's not just Red Lady and Mount Emmons that High Country Conservation Advocates has in effect saved. It's this entire community in Gunnison County from this large industrial entity that, you know, what would it be today? Would it be a bunch of stuff that's no longer in operation? Would we have these impacts of linear power lines and train lines, and will we see those? Or did they really bring together everybody to say, we don't even totally understand why, but we know this isn't right for here. It's an amazing legacy. I am super lucky to follow in the long, just the group of people who have worked for HICA, who have been on the board, who have supported us, whether it's with donations, their time, their volunteer hours. I really take all that seriously. And very excited to, you know, carry that forward into the next generation. I have two young children, and many of these things, when I think about public lands, I just want them to have the same opportunities that we're having today and to be able to go out there and enjoy these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you mentioned, you know, 20 years from now, hopefully the CORE Act will be finalized and we'll have those permanent protections. Any other, you know, dreams and hopes for the future, you know, 20 years into the future?
Wow. Well, that's a really interesting question. You know, here in Gunnison County, there's a couple big projects that I'd like to get behind and see move forward. One of the factors that we have is we do not have a winter travel plan or map. So right now we haven't, it's been since early 90s since we really thought about winter travel with motorized recreation, backcountry skiing, just the emphasis on winter sports in our community. I think it's going to be another great opportunity for all of us to come together and look at the maps and think big picture about what do we want here and where do we want to have snowmobiles, where do we want to have areas that are for wildlife, for skiing, do we want more groomed trails? I think it's going to be a great opportunity to think about how we're going to manage winter recreation, and especially with more people coming here. So that's going to be a big focus and something that's coming in the future. Additionally, you know, there's going to be things that happen. Gunnison County, the mineral belt has run through it since the dinosaurs. And there will always be speculation for the extractive nature with that mineral belt running right through the heart of our public lands. So we need to be attentive to, future threats in that line of things. The coal mines over in Paonia are still active. And we just had a small victory where the district court in Gunnison decided to uphold a state permitting requirement. It was a place where stormwater runoff was coming through the mine and was running directly into the Gunnison River. And we were really lucky that the state would like to permit that. and that the district court upheld the challenge from the mining company that, no, we do need to take a look at these flows that are going right into the Gunnison River. So,
well, we have just a few minutes left. Is there anything else you'd like folks to know?
Well, a lot coming this summer for public lands. Like I said, the next big thing after the Thompson Divide mineral withdrawal that we're looking forward to will be there's going to be some legislation hopefully introduced in this session of Congress, which would be the CORE Act and potentially the Gunnison Outdoor Resource Protection Act, otherwise known as the GORP Act. And that would create some new small wilderness areas in Gunnison County, places that are still very much like wilderness that would meet the definition of that designation. So GORP Act would be a big one for us. The CORE Act will be a big one for us. We expect those to be introduced in this session. And then the land exchange with the U.S. Forest Service and the mining company later this summer. So we plan to have a big party once these things come to fruition. We're doing everything we can to talk to the people involved with the BLM and the Forest Service and keep that land exchange on track and moving forward towards completion. Once it's done, we are going to have a huge party. We're going to throw it back to 1981 when the folks here in Crested Butte, when they first learned that AMAX was backing off on the mining plans. The community had a totally spontaneous event where they hiked to the top of Mount Emmons. The news flew the mayor to the top of the mountain in his wheelchair, and there was a huge celebration, and then they came down to Elk Avenue and had a gigantic street dance. So we're trying to do that again.
I love that.
Once we get the next big layer of protection on Red Lady, which will be the Mount Emmons Land Exchange, look for us to set a date, hopefully in September, where we're going to hike Mount Emmons. We're going to come down, and we're going to have a big shindig on Elk Avenue, and we are going to celebrate because it's been a long time in the coming.
You heard it here first, folks. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. Community members are also invited to meet HICA's new advocacy director. This is John Hare at HICA Happy Hour. That is taking place this Thursday, April 11th at the Eldo here in Crested Butte from 5 to 7 p.m. Everyone's welcome to come chat with Jonathan and celebrate the mineral withdrawal on Thompson Divide. Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Stay tuned. We have got more coming your way. You're tuned into our public affairs program, Community Matters. Up next, we're going to be joined by Cole Cooper with Gunnison County Juvenile Services and Jody Payne. Jody serves as the executive director of the Gunnison Country Food Pantry. And we're going to learn more about a new employee mental health program here in the Gunnison Valley. That's coming up in just a few minutes here on KBUT. Stay tuned. Thank you. are listening to KBUT Community Radio, 90.3 in Crested Butte, 88.9 in Gunnison, and worldwide at kbut.org. This is Community Matters, KBUT's public affairs program, airing every other Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. We are now joined by Cole Cooper with Gunnison County Juvenile Services and Jody Payne. Jody serves as the executive director of the Gunnison Country Food Pantry, and we're here to learn more about a new employee mental health program here in the Gunnison Valley. Cole, Jody, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Kate.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So let's start with the history of this program, employee mental health. Let's get into it. What's the history here?
Where do we begin?
Yeah. I guess, like, just to, like, a brief background on how it started, my coworker Kyle Tibbett and I were pursuing developing a recovery-friendly workplace initiative around this Crested Butte, Gunnison area. And we spoke with a man named David Shapiro, who helps he works with the Colorado School of Public Health and is kind of leading that state initiative. And we asked him about the mental health program, like, hey, is there anyone who would be interested in developing a, you know, community-owned EAP model? And he referred us over to Minds and Associates, which is a mental health service provider. And they have been really stoked about this project and really interested in collaborating. So that's where it all kind of started, was just this serendipitous conversation with David Shapiro and then getting connected with Minds and Associates.
And then Cole getting connected to the workplace development subgroup of the Health Coalition. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, going back a little bit further in 2022, the State of the Community report was released. And within that report, I think we learned a lot of things about our community that was really shocking. And there were three main categories that really stuck out: sense of belonging, workforce development, and access to resources. And the Health Coalition got together and did this half day where they determined these three subgroups that would focus on those areas. And while Cole and Kyle were doing research on the workplace friendly, you know, initiative, these things were probably happening kind of simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I was facilitating a subgroup of the Health Coalition that was focused on workforce support. What can we do to help support our small businesses? What can we do to help support the employees? And we probably had a year of just thinking, and an EAP had been kicked around a few times, but we hadn't really landed on, you know, really looking into that, until we heard from Cole and Kyle that they had talked to Minds, and there might be a potential collaboration between the efforts that we had. But, you know, during the conception phase, I had spoken to a lot of employers and workforce supports who really wanted to support their employees and maybe didn't know how, didn't have the resources to pay for, you know, insurance or whatever it is to help their employees access more mental health resources. Or maybe they had had a bad experience with the crisis line 3 years ago and now they're afraid to engage with that service again. And so they weren't really aware of the resources and felt really kind of lost in where to direct people. So we had that understanding that people really want, employers want to be good bosses, and they want to refer people and they want to be able to help them, but there's not an accessible resource for that. So that, does that answer your question? That's kind of the beginning. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. And for folks that don't know, can you remind everyone what an EAP is? What does that stand for?
Mm-hmm. It's an employee assistance program. So generally larger companies will have this. So like Western has this, the county has this, the hospital has this, and it allows to provide services to their employees. Usually mental health services is a big one. So they'll provide free counseling to their employees. Yeah.
And so, you know, you mentioned that you've been kind of going around to local businesses here in the Valley. What are you hearing from folks?
Mostly that they're excited. I think that we've had a handful of businesses that we've engaged with that have said, you know, we'd sign up tomorrow if we could. Mm-hmm. And right now, and we can get into the nitty gritty of the EAP a little later on, but the price per employee is going to be fairly cheap. So $34 per year per employee with the co-opt model that we're working out with Minds. And so it doesn't seem like finances are a massive barrier right now for not all businesses, but, you know, majority of them seem like they can make that happen, which is really great. I don't know. What else have we learned?
Well, I think a major aspect of this project is we're trying to provide mental health services to a few key different areas. So we're really focusing on construction industry, the service industry, and then also the nonprofits. But we're, you know, the construction service industry generally has some of the higher mental health needs and substance use issues, and oftentimes have the least amount of resources to address that. And so when we've reached out and spoken to construction service industry folks, the business owners have been really clear that, like, yes, this is something we really would like to provide to our employees. You know, we want to do more for them. And, you know, some business will be like, well, I'm already doing this. You know, I've already helped around, you know, with this situation, but I'd love to provide even more resources. So, yeah, I'd say it's been overall very enthusiastic. Yes, how can we do this? How do we sign up? And, yeah, the cost, as one business owner said, was kind of like a no-brainer for them.
Yeah. So, Jody, you kind of talked about one of the benefits being this low cost. What are some other benefits for businesses that could utilize these types of programs?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I always think about the food pantry, right? Like, we have employees there, and if any of my employees were ever in crisis, I would want to have that next step, right? Well, let's get you signed on, and, you know, let's get you talked to a counselor. I think that's kind of step number one, is that helps employers feel like they can actually support their employees, right? They can create a culture of care within their workplace environment that I think will lead, that we believe, and will help with retention, right? People want to stay at workplaces where they feel cared about, where they can access the resources they need, where maybe it's a little bit more open to some of the problems that we know are already happening in the Valley, right? We're all aware that we have some, you know, we have mental health crises happening, and that this could really open up that piece of the workplace culture for folks.
Yeah, and I think, you know, job satisfaction is a piece to that. You know, when you work for a business that cares about you, that you feel like they care about you, I think that adds to job satisfaction. But in terms of, would you like specific resources as well that are offered? Or
yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah, so it'll be like 5 counseling sessions per life event through this program. So you have multiple life events per year. After those counseling sessions finish up, if you still are dealing with that issue, they'll actually get you connected to counselors outside of their service. So they'll look at your insurance, they'll look at who's available locally, and, you know, try to get you connected so there's a continuum of care. There's also wellness coaching sessions. So, you know, just general life wellness coaching. I think there's 4 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also an online chat service that is anonymous peer support. So, you know, you can go on any time, log in, and just talk to someone, just chat with someone about your issues. And that service is generally used from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. is what they were saying. So that's a great service for, you know, it's late at night, you're sitting in bed, you have all these thoughts going on, and you can talk to someone. And then they can also help elevate you to extended care as well, if it's beyond their scope of practice.
But wait, there's more.
There is. I know. More. I was like, yeah, well, yeah. What do you want to focus? Yeah.
For employers specifically, they have HR resources. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at a small nonprofit like the Pantry, we don't have an HR department. That is me. I am HR department. And so, you know, extending HR resources to other organizations and businesses that really, you know, the business owner or the director is the HR. And so to have some professional resources, they offer conflict management. So you and maybe 2 employees are in conflict, and minds will facilitate, mm-hmm. you know, that resolution and or initial conversation, so that maybe the boss or the director, manager, whoever it is, who might not feel like they have the skills, or, you know, might just be uncomfortable getting themselves mixed into that situation, they now have this kind of third party to help navigate conflict. And then I think the last 4, at least the major employer benefits, is that they count. So the business owner should include themselves in their employee count and be able to access things like free counseling. And they offer financial and legal counseling, mm-hmm. things like that. So they also include themselves within their employee numbers to benefit from this service.
Wow. Yeah. No, I like that you guys brought up the fact that, you know, we're a smaller community. Just like you said, like, we don't have an HR department here at KBUT either. Yeah. And a lot of nonprofits don't. And it does seem like more of a rural issue as well, yeah. where, you know, we're not working in like corporate America necessarily. We're all small. So what else would you like folks to know, Cole?
Well, I think, like, you really hit on a really important point, is that most small businesses can't provide these services traditionally. You know, an EAP, the cost of usually accessing an EAP is far out the price range of what is affordable for a local business. And that's the beauty of a co-op model like this, where local businesses can come together and buy in and be able to access these services that they wouldn't otherwise be able to. And I think that's really, like, the beauty of this pilot program.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, too, that this is kind of a unique pilot program and maybe even the first of its kind in Colorado. Do you want to talk about that a little more?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say definitively. I can't say definitively, and I would never want to, you know, if there's a community in Colorado that's doing this already, right on.
Call us, please.
Yeah, call us, tell us how it's going. But when speaking with Minds and Associates and kind of speaking to other organizations and from our research, it seems like this model is somewhat novel, is somewhat new, especially the way that we're approaching it.
Mm-hmm.
Minds and Associates is trying to do this with another community in Utah, but we're not even sure where they're at in that process. You know, I think we might be a little ahead of the game than they are. But yeah, I mean, I think that it is a somewhat novel approach, you know, which is exciting.
I think the maybe the novelty of it is that Minds, so they've been an awesome partner.
Yes.
And I'm really excited to sign the contract with them and get it moving, because they've been so patient and have talked to us a million times.
Mm-hmm. answered so many questions.
Yeah, answered every question probably 3 or 4 times. And, you know, the kind of caveat on their end is one bill, one point of contact, right?
Mm-hmm.
You all may facilitate this co-op model, but that's not what Minds usually does. So you need to find a way to organize that for your community on the back end, which means that it took time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been talking about workplace support for over a year and a half, and probably now on top of that, working on the EAP for about a year. And
mm-hmm.
so it took about 2.5 years to actually get, you know, an idea solidified and moving forward and finding the people who are willing and able to spare the time to contribute towards this. So the Gunnison Community Health Coalition, Riley, the health coalition coordinator, she's going to oversee the kind of day-to-day of the EAP, working with businesses and checking in, doing, you know, reporting and whatnot. But the Community Foundation of the Gunnison Valley has offered to act as the fiscal sponsor. And so businesses will pay them. They'll get the money will be held at the Community Foundation, which will they'll hold the contract with Minds. So then they will pay Minds. There'll be Minds one point of contact, one bill, so to speak, so that we can on our end find a way to house and manage this co-op model. So there's some mental gymnastics we've been jumping through.
Oh my goodness. So what would you like businesses, employees, and employers to know who are listening to this conversation? How can they learn more and participate?
I would say contact us,
mm-hmm.
Either Jody or myself. We also have a survey that we're doing right now as well,
mm-hmm.
that we can get people connected to, because that survey is usually the first thing we'll ask them to do.
Yep.
That lets us assess how many employees do you have, do you have any questions, would you be able to afford the cost, and also some more details about exactly what is offered by the EAP.
Yeah, I think also to emphasize, yes, please reach out, take the mm-hmm. survey. We want to know you're interested. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
We want to emphasize that it's a pilot year,
mm-hmm.
that, as you just said, we couldn't find anyone else in our region or in the state who is willing or able to share how they might have built out this program. So we're learning a lot about mm-hmm. it as we're planning it, as we're organizing it. And so this first year is going to be limited to 150 employees. So the employee count could, you know, that's 150 employees, however many businesses make that up. And it's really important for us to, we're kind of looking for this nexus pilot, group of pilot businesses.
Intersection.
Yeah, right. That, you know, encompasses North and South Valley. They encompass the risk groups, the service industry and construction and nonprofit that have a decent employee count. So, you know, a business with 100 employees won't be great for a pilot year, because they're going to eat up over half, a third of all of our eligible spots, right? Mm-hmm. What are our other I think those are it.
Well, champions, so there's this kind of internal conversation that we're having around champion status. And so what we mean by that is we're looking for businesses that are going to be champions of this project, given that it's a pilot year. So, you know, obviously many different businesses would probably benefit from this and would certainly qualify. But we're, you know, one of the defining factors we're looking for is, you know, business owners and managers who will be really great advocates for this program, letting their employees know about it, reminding them about it, providing resources, checking in, things like that. Yeah. So I think that's another big piece for us.
Yeah. Champion status.
Champions. That sounds great.
I know. Very, illustrious.
So you guys have kind of been at this for, like you said, a couple years. Mm-hmm. What are some of the takeaways for you, you know, being where we are now?
You never know if you don't ask. I feel like I've, that's deja vu. I think I've said that before on Community Matters with you, Kate. But, I, you know, if they wouldn't have, if Kyle and Cole wouldn't have asked Mines if they would entertain a co-op, the answer was always going to be no, right? And we asked the Community Foundation if they would be willing to be a fiscal sponsor, and they said, yeah, or fiscal sponsor-ish, to hold the agreement, so to speak, and they said yes. And that's been my big takeaway, is that, you know, folks are, see the problem, too, and they want to, you know, a company like Mines wants to help a rural community like ours, and, you know, what are your takeaways?
I think one of the big takeaways, I don't know if it's a takeaway, it's just something it's hard for me to wrap my head around sometimes, it's just the fact that, obviously, you know, Jody, you and your group have been doing so much work already, and certainly probably something would happen regardless, but in regards to this relationship that we established with Mines and Associates, was just such a, the circumstances were so odd, you know, like talking with this guy named David Shapiro, who's doing all this work around recovery friendly workplaces, and just offhandedly being like, do you know of an organization that might be interested about this? You know, it was like the last question on my list. I was like, hey, by the way, at the end of this meeting, what are your thoughts about this? He's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, yeah, I can connect you with them. And it was just like, again, serendipitous, just totally serendipitous. And so, yeah, just to your point where it doesn't hurt to ask, you never know what partnerships are going to come up. And so keep an open mind. I think overall, a big takeaway for me is the importance of collaboration. You know, the collaboration that we've done with the Health Coalition, with the Community Foundation, with the Food Pantry, with Juvenile Services, with local community leaders like Mario and
Celeste from the Chamber sits on our committee as well. Yeah.
Yes. And, yeah, exactly. So it's just all these different people coming together to make this happen. And I don't think we would have been able to do it without everyone who's on the team right now. I don't think we would have been able to do it without them.
It was definitely a brainchild. Yeah. It was a couple of meetings of. I giggle now. It's so fun to be on the other side of it. Because at first, it did kind of feel like we've been given an impossible task: figure out something completely new. In 2024, I don't know if I had ever really imagined that we would be. I would be figuring out something kind of new, completely new in that way, which was really, really special.
Yep.
Well, is there anything else you guys would like folks to know? We have just a few minutes left.
I think that, you know, obviously there's been these growing conversations in our community about mental health resources and needing to do better when it comes to conversations around substance use and mental health. And really, one thing that I really appreciate about this project is it increases the sense of community obligation to care for each other, you know, collective care ethic. And I think that's just something, you know, that I hope people take away from this, and something that, you know, I hope to pursue and that we're all really pursuing in the work that we do is just developing more community care. You know, the issues that we face cannot be solved on an individual basis. It's going to take all of us coming together to address these issues. And that's what's so exciting about bringing business owners into that conversation and letting business owners have the opportunity to care, because we spoke to them, they want to do stuff, right? They might not know how or what exactly how to do it, but you give them opportunity, and many of them have just been like, yes, please, let me help. I want to be a part of that. Yeah. So that's really exciting, I think.
Yeah, I thought community care.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. Well, thank you guys both so much for coming on the air. It's always a joy to have you. Jody back again on Community Matters, and Cole for the very first time. Always welcome back.
Can't wait.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and special thanks to all of our guests for today. In case you're just tuning in, you can listen to the full episode at kbut.org. Next Monday from 4 to 5 p.m., you'll hear the KBU Teens and Rocky Mountain Community Radio's regional roundup from 4 to 5 p.m. Stay tuned for NPR's All Things Considered from 5 to 7 p.m. That's followed by Bobby's World with Bobby Digital from 7 to 9 p.m. And then we have Fresh Tracks with Grant Hooning. That's from 9 to 11 p.m. You're listening to KBUT Community Radio. Stay tuned. We'll have some NPR coming up here shortly.